This is from the Midwest City Free Baptist Church.
Find Proverbs. We're going to look at a section that's called chapter 3. And what, like 6 verses in there. So let's see what it says to us. These words here, Proverbs 3. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. For the gain from her is better than the gain from silver, and her profit better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are the ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called blessed. All right, these are the words then of the wise man, the inspired words. Yeah, I could have titled this Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, like that slide said, only because it's sort of a familiar term. Is that still a familiar phrase? Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise? Kind of. It sort of comes from that, I think it's a Ben Franklin quote, isn't it? Early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. I sort of hope that's not true, actually, that part about the early to bed, early to rise. I'm not doing so hot on that. So I hope Ben Franklin's proverbs aren't as true in that sense. Whatever the case is, people are sort of familiar with the term healthy, wealthy, and wise. And I think most people, pretty much all people universally want at least the first two, right? Most people want to be healthy, and they definitely want to be wealthy. I'm not as sure about wise. I think they still want to be wise. They just don't. It sort of gets outranked by the other two, I think, for most people. Now, the so-called prosperity gospel that we talk about sometimes used to be called, maybe it still is in some circles, the health and wealth gospel. I always thought it's funny that in the phrase healthy, wealthy, and wise, wisdom got left out of that description. Not the health and wealth and wisdom gospel, just the health and wealth. Thank you very much. Just take those two. And no doubt about it, people all around us would prioritize them that way. I mean, wisdom is good. They might say, I wouldn't mind being wisdom, even sort of more or less the way the Bible describes it. I mean, I wouldn't mind having true understanding, true perspective, sort of deep roots to understand things as they are, to have real wisdom, to kind of have some spiritual depth. All that'd be really cool. I'd like that. It's still coming in at a distant third in this particular hierarchy, because I still want the money and the health way more. I think that's kind of probably how most people would see it. And I mean, frankly, a lot of times that's probably how we see it. Day-to-day life, it's hard to shake it off. I wonder how many of us really believe it most of the time, sort of verses 14 and 15, for example. So when we just look at what it says about wisdom and understanding in those first few verses, it says about them that they gain you more than silver, that they profit you more than gold, and that they are more precious than jewels. So I'll sort of break it down for you and just show you the three bullet points of that. I mean, it's sort of synonymous and means the same thing, and it's kind of a poetic way of saying, this is how good wisdom is. This is why you should want it and why you should have it. It said it in those two verses. Gain you more than silver, it said, profit you more than gold, and are more precious than jewels. But really, I mean, who really believes that? I mean, how many people really believe that? I mean, wouldn't you take the silver or the gold? I'm just sort of looking for honesty here, because it's hard to shake off the craving for the material stuff, for cash money, and all the stuff it buys. And that's just being honest among us. There's no reason for us to come into church and kind of lie. I mean, you know, one of the things that the church should be characterized by, the sort of brutal level of honesty. Not necessarily my brutal honesty about you. That kind of bleeds into rudeness. Go ahead and just start with brutal honesty about me. Right? Nothing wrong with that. Nobody really wants to go to a church where they just tell you a bunch of nonsense that's not even true. We might as well hear some stuff that's true about us. I mean, so let's face it. We're sort of geared to want stuff more than... I mean, this is a struggle we're in. So it's not like this is just easy for us. We often just don't believe this. Look, if you don't want to hear any truths that are uncomfortable, stay home and watch Osteen. All right, so don't kill the messenger. All right, I'm just dealing with what is true. What is true matters more. By the way, that's one of the token things about wisdom. We already talked about that before. Wisdom is the kind of discernment and the character to face up to what's true. I don't like it. Yeah, but if it's true, it's true. And so we struggle with this. But let's think about, though, why we should believe it. So maybe you say, you know, even as I think about it right now, man, it's kind of hard to believe it even now. I mean, I want to be wise and understanding and a true disciple and all of that stuff, but it's hard not to like money more. Well, let's just think about some of the things, though, that we're told in the rest of it. So, a few more verses here. So verses 16 through 18, some more. Here's how we could sort of break down what he says in the rest of that passage there. What is it about wisdom that makes it valuable? Why should I like it and want it and chase it and try to go after it and have it more than I should run after money, gold, and all the stuff I can buy? Why? Tell me why. Well, here are benefits of wisdom. One of them you could just call longevity. Long life is in her right hand. And then in her left hand, riches and honor, by which he doesn't just mean strictly wealth, but sort of what we could say is beyond mere money. And then you could have what I call here medicine for misery. Her ways are the ways of pleasantness. And the world will beat you down, beat you up, and then beat you down, and it's not always a pleasant ride. And so the man of true wisdom and the woman of true wisdom can sort of have a kind of pleasantness about life, even when life ain't so pleasant. Misery is everybody's business. Well, then there's sort of the idea of the chaos of life. So all her paths are peace. A lot of storms of different kinds. And so wisdom provides, as Bob Dylan said, a shelter from the storm. Right? Anybody? Mama, won't you give me a shelter from the storm? Come on, John, sing it. I'm just kidding. Too young, he knows not the ways of Dylan. But that's what you get. That's what you get. You get some peace. Peace of mind. I mean, like peace in here. Even when stuff's really wild and it's not so peaceful. And then sort of as a summary almost, you get this line, the tree of life. It's a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Sort of a feminine pronoun, because wisdom is personified like a woman. In fact, Proverbs kind of personifies these two opposite things that it characterizes as though two women. You have wisdom, and then you have what we might call Lady Folly, mm-hmm. Right? And Proverbs warns you about her over here. She'll make you a fool. She'll take everything you got. She'll lure you in. And then ruin your life. But Lady Wisdom's calling out, saying, "No, no, 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 don't do that. Don't do it. Looks good, but don't." Lady Wisdom's telling you the truth. You should listen to her instead. And so, this business then of wisdom and wealth. So you look at this list here and ask yourself, these are good things. Can money buy these things? Can material goods provide me these things? Can these things be bought? You know? I mean, really. The truest kind of contentment, the deepest kind of peace, fulfillment kind of stuff, really it's what people really want. Even all the insane people in the world that are chasing after other things, there's a part of them that really wants this. They really do. They may not even know they want it, but that's why they're unsatisfied. Are rich people satisfied? Are famous people satisfied? Do they sit back and say, "Now I'm content"? It's very rare to find anybody who finds that. What are they looking for? They're looking for something else, something deeper. But there's no price tag on it. They call these things, you could say they're priceless things. So you know that there are those, obviously, who have gained all the goods of the world. I mean, they've got a lot of money. They've got a lot of fame and influence. People want to know what they think. People seek after them, to talk to them, to hear what they have to say, because people recognize them everywhere they go. They got money is no object to them. Wow, what a life. Is it a tree of life for them? I mean, let's look around at the... Typically, is it a tree of life for them? Is it really... Are they really people who, like the famous line, is a man in full? I mean, someone who's really just truly content. What's that common refrain so many times, and people read the newest or the latest headline and they're shocked by it about another sort of celebrity suicide. And what do they always say? We say it. We all say, well, you know, I just don't understand. And even the people that sort of semi-know them will say that. I don't understand. So successful. I mean, he really had everything. I mean, she really had it all. They reached the top. So, and again, we're tempted to think that. I'm tempted to think it. I'll see these people who, you know, they find them face down somewhere and you think, what? I mean, you really hit the jackpot. I mean, you like really hit, you won the lottery. You made it. You got, you know, a little luck on your side plus a lot of talent. And then next thing you know, man, you really are good at what you do and you got paid a lot of money and everybody, you've got real influence because people want to hear what you have to say. Wow, what's more? Why would you do that? What else did you want? But see, that's because then the voice of wisdom has to call out to me again and say, hey, dummy, you forgot. You see, you're thinking like that moron again that you used to be. And see, you know what I mean? You're currently lapsing back into those presuppositions that tell you that the goods of the world can give you true, lasting satisfaction and contentment. And that's why you don't understand why that person did that. But then you have to get wise again and remember, no. Of course those things can't bring what that person needed. Something more. That person needed something more valuable than the three houses they had bought in the three beachfront locations and that garage full of those classic cars they had. They needed something more. They needed something that they couldn't write a check for. And they didn't have it. They didn't have sort of lasting peace and the deeper kind of contentment that this writer is talking about. Those things were not a tree of life for that person. And it's truly sad. Now look, to understand these verses though, and these things you look at on the screen, you think, wow, I like those things. But to really understand these things and to get what we need out of these teachings, we have to understand the nature of a proverb. Now, some of us have spent a lot of weeks on the Wednesday class. We had this Wednesday class. We were talking about all the principles and the practices of good Bible interpretation. And the Bible is a text, and sometimes a complicated text, right? So how do we interpret it better? And we went through all these things. And so some of you will remember that one of those weeks we talked about how the Bible has all different types of writing. The genres. The Bible is all kinds of writing. All different types of writing. Different literary types. So we don't interpret them all equally the same. I mean, we don't interpret them in the same way. Just like you don't want to be interpreted in the same way with everything you say and write, do you? Because sometimes you're telling a joke, and sometimes you're being really serious. And if, when you're being really serious with someone, they react as if it's a joke, that's no good. You want those laughs when it's joke time, but then you really aren't happy with the laughs when it's serious time, right? Like when the parent's lecturing the kid, and if they laugh in the middle of the serious talk about it, you don't go, all right, getting a few laughs. They got a warm crowd in here. No, you're not pleased with the laughs you got. You don't want any laughs. It's like, no. You got the wrong genre right now. This ain't stand-up hour. Like, I'm trying to talk to you about something serious. However, you know, if you're around your pals and you lay a good joke on them, or in Jeremy's case, a bad joke, right? Hallelujah. However lame it is, I mean, he hit me with one this morning. Right? And I would mock the joke and ridicule the joke, but I would be a hypocrite on account of he can testify to the fact that I laughed. So, I'm not allowed then to demean the joke. What does that say about me? But you see, I laugh because it was a joke he was telling me. But if he told me about how what a lousy week he had because he was sick all week and struggled all week and was dealing with a bout of depression, and then I laughed, why, that's no good. See, you gotta know what the type of thing is that you're hearing or reading. Proverbs is a type. It's wisdom literature. It's the collected or recorded sayings of wise people. And in particular, we know Solomon's one of them, but he's not the only one. He collected some, and then later we get a couple of other figures who have some things to say. And it's a unique, specific form of writing, so we want to interpret it for what it is. And so when we read here, and we look at the list, and we say, ooh, long life, I like that. Riches and honor, I like that. Pleasantness and peace, I'll take some of that. Those are good things. But don't, my point is this, don't mistake Proverbs for promises. That is individual specific promises. This is wisdom literature. It's not law. And it's not a formula. These are general truths, but they're not some kind of guarantees to you. Now, this mistake is made all the time by people. And I think today, a lot of times, we've sort of got this problem. I don't know if you've noticed it, but there's a real problem today where people like to let exceptions nullify rules. You know, there's a general rule, and then there's an exception to it. And what people have a mistake of doing today is to look at an exception and to either think they either can make the exception the rule, or they think that the exception means there is no rule, because I found an exception. So, for example, let's say I'm talking to an alien race from some other planet. I'm trying to describe what a human is, what a human being is. And I might say, human being, you know, two arms, two legs, walks upright, you know, among other things. Well, okay. Well, is it possible, though? They might meet a person missing an arm or a leg? Possible, right? There will probably be exceptions to any description I give. Human beings have two eyes, two ears. Well, maybe not all of them. There will be an exception. Does that mean that the description I gave is no good? Does that mean that rule doesn't apply? Should I redefine what a human being is to say a human being is a being that often walks upright but sometimes crawls on the ground, may have any number of limbs, from one to whatever unspecified number? Should I just obliterate these distinctions that we pretty much know describe? Well, how about this? What if somebody artificially somehow puts some kind of gills on themselves or surgically attaches wings? Right? See, I'm trying to explain to the alien person the difference in a fish and a bird and a dude. And I say, you see, some dude you meet, you know, he won't have wings and he won't have gills to swim and fins. And then you'll know you're talking to a guy, you know, a human being. But then, look, if he runs across somebody who's wearing wings, whoop, there it goes. I've now obliterated the distinction between bird and man. No, I have not. You might meet a bird that didn't have wings, right? Has a defect. You see how the principle applies anyway? Exceptions will always be exceptions. It doesn't nullify the rule, the general principle. Now, when it comes to interpreting Proverbs then, and by the way, lots of other parts of Scripture are the similar way, it gives you a truth. And we can, if we don't look out, and I've heard preachers do it and people who teach, we can mistake the general truth, which is true, regardless of its exceptions, it remains true as a general principle. But we think, I can take it and I can claim it like a promise. Is it true to say that people who exercise in a regular way and eat pretty healthy will live longer than people who never exercise at all and who have terrible diets? Is it true to say that? Yeah. It's true. Thank you, James. It's true. Generally, can I find exceptions? Well, obviously I will find an exception here and there. There will be someone who exercised regularly and ate only their veggies and dropped dead prematurely. That will happen from time to time. Well, there goes that, so much for your rule. Man, those jerks, they lied to us. They didn't lie to you. Your doctor didn't lie to you. The rule holds. It's a general truth and a principle. But it's not a mathematical calculation. Now, there are all kinds of things people can claim. And they might, so they might say, I'm claiming a proverb. I will be wise and I will pursue wisdom. And now I know I'm going to live to be 140. I'm claiming it. and I'm going to get rich. You know what I mean? And I'll have there, my life will have no tumultuous things will happen in my life. The Lord said, I'm claiming it right there. Now, this, as you well know, far too many preachers have taught this this idiotic and false way to interpret these kinds of teachings. It's just not true. By the way, Proverbs has a lot of things you could do like this. How about if you train up a child in the way that he should go, and then what? He's older, he will not depart from it. And so, here comes some person in church that did the best they could and tried to train, and their kid's behind bars. He knocked over a couple of 7-Elevens, but I tried to raise him. It's a general principle. You couldn't, it's not that the Bible lied to me. No, there are all sorts of things that can happen. Because, how about this one? This is, maybe this example makes it clearest. If you are faithful to God, if you keep His commandments, if you live that sort of life, it will go well with you. Blessed is the righteous man, right? For fill in the blank. There are lots of places throughout the Bible where something like that is taught. Are there not? Old Testament, New Testament. Blessed is the righteous one. So if you're upright, you obey the commands of God, you try to do what's right, you do all these things, you live that kind of life, it goes well with you. It goes far better with you. Life is much better for you. And there are all these things that might say, like, you know, your life is longer and you have more stuff to be better, your peace of mind. All these things might be said. And yet, it is not a guaranteed promise that every person who lives a righteous and good life is guaranteed these things. Like excellent health, money, great relationships, no stress in life, any of that stuff. It's not guaranteed. Now, how do I know that? How do I know that's how we should interpret those things? Well, we could just have a good look across the lives of the most righteous people in Scripture and in history. There's a story in the Old Testament going way back to the ancient times about this guy who suffered a lot, way more than you, way more than I've ever suffered, way more than pretty much anyone you know. Lost everything, had a lot, lost it all. Entire family died. Overcome with terrible physical illness. What's his name? Job. Well, he must have been a lousy and unrighteous man. I mean, because you know if he were a righteous man and a good man, an upstanding man, and a man who believed and followed God, well, he wouldn't have had all that lousy stuff happen to him. He wouldn't have been in sickness. Pain and people die and lost all of his. That would never have happened because he's a righteous man. He would have claimed those promises. Was Job righteous? He was extremely righteous. You see, Job's so-called friends came around and they interpreted the principles wrongly. And that's why they said, well, Job, why don't you confess all your rotten secret sins that you must have been committing routinely for this to happen to you? Because they thought that the principle meant Job should have been guaranteed. And the fact that all this terrible stuff happened to him must have meant that he couldn't have been a righteous man. Isn't that what his pals thought, his so-called friends? And Job really appreciated all their wonderful advice, didn't he? Really helped him out a lot. He said to them, miserable counselors are you all. Like, please go away. We're friends like you who needs an enema. You know what I mean? Pardon me. That's what he said. He didn't need that help. Go away. Get lost. You're not helping me. You're wrong. Your interpretation of what God says is absolutely false. So you're just, it's like if I didn't have enough lousy stuff going for me, you're not helping me. You're part of my suffering. You're just one more layer of suffering being stacked on top of my pile of suffering. How about this question? Who would you say was the most righteous, morally perfect, and upstanding, and godly person who ever lived in human flesh on planet Earth? Who? That's right. That's an easy, that's a Sunday school answer, people. The Christmas and Easter attender knows that one. Of course, the Lord Jesus himself, the most righteous, morally, the only morally perfect person. Luckily, because of that, he didn't have to suffer at all. Did he suffer? He suffered all right. You see, his life example all by itself is enough to obliterate the mythological false understanding of what these principles teach. His life by itself would teach that, because he was most righteous of all and suffered worse than anyone. Does that mean these principles then, this stuff's not even true? No, it remains true. It remains true for what it is, which is wisdom. Because if we were to look across the board, see, at the general population, if we looked in the big numbers, you know what we would find? We would find that those people who follow after God, who belong to Him, who live those kind of lives based on those teachings, who are the wisest, we would find that across the board, they are the happiest people. They tend to outlive the people who aren't like that. They tend to probably be blessed with more, generally, blessed with more. Blessed with better life. Do they have more peace of mind? Yeah. Generally, I guarantee you find it. By the way, social scientists are always doing these studies. They love to do the... You ever see that stuff? It's always like, you know, at the cover of Time or something.
New study finds that people who pray, more mentally healthy.
They always are finding this stuff. And I'm always just going, yeah. Thanks for retelling me what I kind of already knew. See, they're giving you just some empirical validation for the truth of the principle. That beat them to that by a couple of thousand years. Well, so there is now a clear and certain way that you can determine that wisdom then is not the same thing as health or wealth or any other material goods, that it's distinct from those things. Because this book, what we've been reading in Proverbs, we've seen it like the 2 weeks I've been doing this, and then you see it over and over. What this book tells you to do, what it teaches us to do, what it reportedly commands us to do, is to not just be open to wisdom or accept it if it comes your way or consider it. It gives you the command to actively pursue wisdom, to chase it, go after it, try to get it. You know what I mean? Doesn't it say that over and over? It says, get wisdom, seek it, find it, get it, and then get more of it and keep getting more of it. That's what it tells you to do. So, if that's what it tells you to do, with regard to wisdom, can you think of any places where the Bible tells you to chase, to want, to desire, to go after money and material possessions? Any places where it tells you that? It never tells you to do that. It never says, go get money, go chase it, pursue it, love it, want it, need it, get more of it, more than you had before, keep getting it. Never says that. In fact, it says exactly the opposite. It says that if you love and chase and seek and go after money and material things, this is very bad for you and very bad for everyone around you and very bad for your life. The love of money, hello, is a root of all kinds of evil. The love of money. You like it, you want it, you seek it, you chase it. It's like your be-all and your end-all. All forms of evil. You know, it's just, we see this all the time, borne out. I mean, if you look at the world and all the major ills that it has and all the great injustices that happen, pretty much anywhere where people are lording it over other people and abusing other people and the worst things that happen to people at the hands of other people, you will get down to the bottom of it and you will find that greed is its bottom line. That's what motivates people. Now, there are a few people in it who just, maybe they're just mean and nasty and they're just doing it for its own sake because they're just fundamentally rotten, horrible people. They want to do that to people. But most people, they don't do it just because they want. The abuse of people and the misuse of people and the all the terrible things they do with regard to people is just an unfortunate byproduct for their real goal, which is greed. Because, you know, they just figure these eggs are worth breaking to get my omelet. They're after the money. So greed really is. So see the distinction. Okay, are riches evil? They're not evil. Are there truly wise and godly and good people who are blessed with a lot of money? Of course there are. And by the way, I mean, since this is a sliding scale, a lot of people from a lot of parts of the world will walk in here and say, yeah, that must be true because I'm looking at all you people and you people are rich. And you'd say, heck no, I ain't rich. I'm making really over minimum wage. My bills are, you know, I ran out of month before, or however they say it, right? More month than money. And they'd say, no. I know that, no, but you see where I come from, you're rich. And so, clearly, the money ain't evil. The riches aren't evil. But you're not supposed to want it, chase it, go after it. But wisdom you are supposed to want and chase and go after. So there's a clear distinction between the two. So you're being told to prioritize the one over the other. And generally speaking, you may well be blessed with the other along with other plenty of other stuff. Jesus said, seek first all that stuff you want really bad. And then also, the kingdom's also good too. No! Seek first the kingdom. What about the other stuff? All the other stuff will be added. But get your priorities right. The other stuff takes care of itself. And by the way, go ahead and enjoy the other stuff. If you're blessed with some of the other stuff, it's no sin to enjoy some of that. Go ahead. If the Lord drops a donut in your lap, don't curse the donut and curse yourself. Eat the donut and enjoy the donut. But brother, don't go home and build an altar to your donut and worship your donut. And yet that's what people do. Sort of, right? Now just replace donut with my car, my house, my money. Or my talent, my looks, my social influence, my intelligence. I mean, replace it with any of that stuff. Idolatry is, it's manifold. And any old thing can be an idol. Because as we said, remember our series, the human mind, the human heart is an idol factory. We're like, it's like making the widgets. It's an assembly line. They're just, right? Idols are just coming off the press at all times. Well, in the fullness of Revelation, we see that Christ is the embodiment of true wisdom. And this is a good transition for us, as it is Communion Sunday, and we will observe communion. But so we bring it to the gospel. The gospel is read throughout, and we read with gospel lenses on. Yeah, even Proverbs. Well, Jesus ain't in Proverbs. No, not explicitly. But the eyes of fulfillment look back to Revelation, and they see the gospel in it. So yes, the central core message is even in Proverbs. So Christ is a fulfillment of all these wise things and all this wisdom. Paul told the Colossian believers when he wrote to them, he said that their hearts, he prayed, may be encouraged, being knit together in love, to reach all the fullness of assurance of understanding and the knowledge of God's mystery, which is Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. All the treasures of wisdom and knowledge, now that we live on this side of things, we can see that they are all embodied and all enshrined and all enwrapped in Christ Himself. And so, we can see even the gospel, even the key simple elements of this in every text. Sometimes it's a little tricky, but certainly when it's talking about wisdom, truth, and all the good things of life, how do I get them? I'll chase what's right and good. How do I find that? Where you should look first, and no further yet at least, is in the person who we said was the true fulfillment and the most righteous ever to live.